conversation with queer identified writers about their works and lives.
Welcome to Queer Words. This is Wayne Goodman, and on this episode, I have the delightful pleasure of conversing with Xavier Axelson. Hey, Xavier.
Hey, how are you?
So far, so good. Could we start by having you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. I'm Xavier Axelson, and I am a writer and columnist living in Los Angeles. I started getting published back in 2010. I've been publishing pretty steadily since then in the gay erotica romance genre. Recently relaunched my website and have had all of my titles reissued with a new publisher and am moving forward with some new work.
This is Queer Words, and I do ask my guests, what qualifies you as queer?
Oh my goodness. I don't think there's anything unqueer about me. In all senses of the definition, I've always been different. Definitely one of those kids that the parents didn't know what to do with. Interested in things that other kids weren't interested in and a little more precocious than other children were. I started off my life pretty queer. Both my parents will definitely say I was a weirdo. In sense of the queer LGBTQ world, I've always identified with other. When I have a choice to go with something that's typical or usual, my mind always goes to other. I'm always more interested in what's happening over there and not necessarily what's happening in front of everybody. I'm always interested in what's happening in a smaller group and more obscure parts of culture and art. And I've definitely had sex with a lot of with men. So I guess in that sense, that makes me queer.
When did you first accept being queer?
Isn't that interesting? It's so different than accepting. It's different than saying you accept your sexuality, because that was pretty much right away when I came out when I was 16 years old. I always accepted myself. I was very clear about I didn't care who accepted me because I accepted who I was. Identifying as queer has been relatively recent. I would say probably within the last 3 to 5 years, once queerness really came back into my consciousness as a positive thing and not something negative. Being called the queer definitely had connotations as to when I was growing up. If I was being called something, that was definitely along the lines of if somebody was bullying me or something was going on, that word had a negative connotation. For me, it's been recent that it's become definitely more positive and definitely something that I've grabbed onto. I went to a queer event called Planet Queer in Silver Lake. That's all about celebrating queerness. Queerness has become so wonderful for me and something to be really proud of. I would say within the last 3 to 5 years, being queer has really become something positive for me.
What about having some queer hero figures?
Quentin Crisp has definitely become somebody that I admire. His sensibility, his style, his way with words, he's definitely somebody that I have come to really admire. Tennessee Williams, of course, who's one of my favorite writers and inspiration and aspiration of mine. In the writing world, those two definitely speak up to me, as well as Oscar Wilde, of course. There's so many people that I've looked up to over the years that aren't necessarily queer, but those are definitely three of the ones that I admire right now.
What about literary influences?
Richard Adams, who wrote Watership Down, Peter S. Beagle, who wrote The Last Unicorn, and Tennessee Williams. Those are my three inspirations in my writing, major, major inspirations. I can't even talk about The Last Unicorn without getting emotional. Watership Down, since I was a little boy, has always been a huge inspiration for me. Where I'm sitting right now, I have 2 art prints of Watership Down above my writing desk. Those three, for sure. Margaret Mitchell, of course, because of Gone with the Wind, which was a huge inspiration to me as a kid. C.S. Lewis, of course, the Narnia books, which I started reading as a kid and finished reading as an adult. I can't not say Laura Ingalls Wilder. I have a huge admiration for her. I've read all of her books. And again, read the Little House book starting off, not even as a kid, but probably in high school and finished them as an adult. And then went on to read all of the books about her family and her life. Those writers are all inspirations to me.
What inspired you to begin writing?
I started writing. The real story behind it is one of one-uppance that started, I believe it was 4th or 5th grade. The class brain, we had to write a short story, and the class brain, who I couldn't stand, wrote a short story that was 5 or 6 pages long. To outdo him, I decided that I was going to write something longer. I think I wrote 14 pages. That is what started me writing. I thought I was going to go into designing or cooking, actually, to be a chef. Writing took over. Once I started writing, I never stopped. I wrote that story and I've been writing my entire life, but it started because I wanted to be better than he was.
How does queerness impact your writing?
Queerness affects my writing because I'm always coming at it from this out of range perspective of the mainstream. What I struggled with when I was writing gay erotica was my perspective was never entirely focused on the gay sex of it. No matter what I wrote, no matter what subject it was about, my point of view always crept into it, which is definitely a queer perspective, a personally queer perspective. When you're writing from the perspective of other all the time, it's always going to be the queer perspective because it's never the mainstream perspective.
When it comes to writing process, do you like to put together an outline and work from that structure, or do you sit down and start typing, or maybe somewhere in the middle?
I have such a fucked up process. I really absolutely should have outlines. I hate it because I was just going through some edits from an old publisher of mine, and literally one of the notes was, you need to do a chapter by chapter outline. I just don't do it. I just don't want to do it, and that's the truth, and I'm too lazy to do it. My writing process is very exterior and it's not interior. And I think that throws people off a little bit. And by exterior, I mean, I feel like I'm a vessel for outside energies to come through. Everybody's here and I just have to listen to them. I just have to let them through. I don't necessarily feel that the writing is coming from inside of me. I feel like it's coming from outside. I'll be writing, especially in what I'm in the middle of working on right now, I'll be writing and then all of a sudden somebody comes in, a character comes to me and I'm like, what are you? I didn't know who you were. I have to wait and I have to listen to that character. I'll be like, wow, I didn't see you coming at all. I have to let myself be free with it and let them come through and work around it. And it always works out. I have a really temperamental bitch of a muse who does not want to be fucked with and makes it very clear that if I am going to fuck with the muses, they will definitely fuck me back. I have to be very conscious of them. I don't have a muse that I can just da-da-da-da-da and write and be really casual about it. I either have to commit 1,000% to it or not at all. I don't have a half-in, half-out muse. She's like, you're either going to commit to me and give to me or you're not getting anything. I have to be open and listening to who's coming through because I'll be writing along and I have this idea. And all of a sudden, this character's wife comes into the story and her voice is really, really strong. She's like, I need to be heard. And then she gets in the story and all of a sudden I have a beta reader reading a piece and they're like, I need more about that wife. She's amazing. And I need to know more about this and that. I know that the characters are meant to be there. A lot of writers write internally where I write externally.
Can you talk a little bit about your body of work?
Yeah, I got published the first time with the now infamous Silver Publishing, which was a huge scandal back in the day when that all erupted. I'm not even quite sure what happened. They were looking for holiday stories, which I have zero experience writing. Me getting into erotica started because there was an article in the LA Weekly as the gay erotica was just starting to erupt. It was all about women writing gay erotica. I read this article. My first idiotic thought was, well, I'm gay. I have sex with men. I can certainly write erotica as good as women who have not had gay sex with men. That's what started me down this path. Okay, this market is hot right now. Certainly I can do it. I did a Google search. Silver Publishing was looking for erotica, gay, MM, Christmas stories. This is where my queer perspective comes in. Mine did not come across as the Hallmark mistletoe holiday story. Mine was going to be about World War II. A soldier going off to war stops at a cafe on the way out of town on Christmas Eve and ends up having this interlude with the owner of the cafe, and then he goes off to war. Not exactly what they were looking for, but they accepted it. I got published writing this Christmas Eve story. Shortly after that, they reached out to me to write a Valentine's Day story. I wrote probably what is one of my favorite pieces of erotica. People were so upset about it. The reviewers said, the main character is so terrible that if he got hit by a car, I'd be more worried about the car. I thought it was so genius. I couldn't stop laughing. Everyone hated him. He ran a chocolate store. He was extremely cruel to the men that he had sex with, very demeaning. Never Say Never was the name of the collection. I had this bastard who gets his heart finally taken by this man who's delivering strawberries to him for chocolate-covered strawberries for Valentine's Day. I loved it because I thought it was extremely hot. I thought the sex was really great. I really enjoyed writing it. And because he is such an asshole, that was what was so fun about him. But people hated him. That led to them reaching out to me to write a Father's Day story. That produced one of my most popular titles that people are still talking about today, which is Lily. People really loved it. I am so grateful for that. When I submitted Lily, they got back to me and said, well, it's not really Father's Day, is it? But it's really good. So we're going to release it on its own. We're not going to put it into the Father's Day collection. We're going to ask you to expand it, and we're going to release it as its own title. I got involved with Seventh Window Publications. All of these publishing houses are no longer. When I worked with Seventh Window, I released Duchess Boy, which was a very popular title, followed by The Birches, followed by The Incident. All three titles were very popular. When those three titles came out, we put them into one collection, which had those three titles in them. Duchess Boy was a Western, cowboys, and then The Incident was a cop thing, fired by my brother as a cop. I took a lot of the stories that I knew about the small town police department that I grew up with, coming from a town where everybody knew every police officer by their last name. The Birches was inspired by my fantasy of owning a restaurant in a small town. All three of them have very different storylines. Each story had a recipe that was included with it because there's food in each story. I was really proud of those three.
If people want to read your books, where can they find them?
I have an Amazon author page, my website, which is xaviersensual.com.
I'm hoping you have something you can share with us.
I don't think I've ever read from the last novella that I had released, which was called Lavender, inspired by the lavender farms in Northern California. Walking back to the lavender farm, my emotions swung from extreme to extreme. Several times my stomach dropped as though I were on an elevator. I composed myself before entering the gate leading to the farm. My grief-stricken mother didn't need to catch me in crisis. Surrounded by lavender fields, the isolated farmhouse stood out against the sunburned sky. My mother, statuesque and graceful, cut a striking image amidst the swaying lavender, reminding me of a knife stuck in the earth. The mourners had long gone. Only heat and the incessant hum of insects remained. Mom? She stood in front of an old potting bench, my father's urn in her hands. We'd set up several of these benches so guests could bundle and tie their freshly picked lavender with silk ribbon or brown twine. God, how my father loved chatting with people. He could talk incessantly about lavender, the land, and where to eat in town, and what to see before they headed back to LA or wherever. Suddenly, I felt angry and hated anyone who'd ever traipse through our fields. Mom, what are you doing? She shook her head but didn't speak. Let's go inside where it's cool, I said, coming beside her. Is he really dead? She asked. Yes, I answered, fighting to control my voice from cracking. She released the urn and fingered rolls of partially used ribbon and twine left on the potting table. Your father never tied ribbon correctly, she said, forcing a pained smile. Every time someone came to this table, he'd yell, Luelle, for Christ's sake, can you tie this damn thing? She looked at me, remember? Every time, I whispered. His hands were so rough. She took her head and sniffed. I loved him. I covered her hands with mine. I know, I said. Your hands are just like his. Can you tie knots with the ribbons? Nope. We smiled at each other. Let's go inside, I urged. Mom removed her stylishly large sunglasses and surveyed the land. Can you believe this came from a single French lavender bush he brought back on her honeymoon? He loved Paris. She dabbed the corners of her eyes with a delicate handkerchief. I nodded, envisioning the trip we would never take. The image proved too painful. The ground shifted and my head ached. Electric tingles crept along the base of my spine. My knees buckled and I fought to stay upright. The urge to run back to the rest area and take another man or be taken by a man possessed me. Lawrence, I'm fine. I declined her help and steadied myself on the thought of taking a cock. Something inside my gut, beside grief, fatty casseroles and sugary desserts would be welcome. The image of the funeral banquet filled my head, and I fought the urge to vomit. Mom looked at me. You need a change. We both do. Her eyes flashed with life. We can still go to Paris. We should still go to Paris. Since my father's death, her need to return to France had grown from casual longing to a desperate need to escape. Mom, my life is here, the farm, our business, everything you both worked so hard to create. How could we leave? Let's close the farm for the season and come back. I'm not going to Paris, Mom. I said, not now. Oh, Lawrence, you're so much your father's son. Is that a bad thing? I asked. She hugged me. Never stop being his son or mine. When she let go, she stared at the urn. I cannot mourn here. Memories, prying eyes, concerned neighbors. I'll go crazy if I stay. We have to find a way, I said. Will you hate me if I leave? I hope not, I answered, unable to sort the emotions flooding my thoughts. Your father wanted to go back to France. He so wanted you to see Paris as an adult. Mom, stop. Leaving is out of the question, for me anyway. You do what you have to do. This pain is unbelievable. She wiped tears from her eyes. I can't scatter his ashes. She backed toward the house. I can't. I watched her leave the fields, walking and stumbling into a run, and finally heard the sound of the screen door clanging shut. The sun setting, the lavender swaying in the cool night breeze. I imagined Dad bent in the fields picking stems, and the fear he must have felt when his heart stopped. He died alone. Tears spilled down my cheeks and my chest ached. Maybe I would drop dead too, and for the briefest second wished I would. Fuck. Disturbed by my screams, birds cried out and took flight from nearby jacaranda trees.
What's your involvement in the queer communities?
Not enough. I'm just starting to re-emerge into the queer community. I went to a queer reading the other day to support a local writer who I really like and friends with. I went out to the queer community performance art event. I'm very much old school gay. I feel that the gay community is a family. I'm one of those people, like, if you're gay or anywhere in the rainbow, I have your back. I don't care what that means. I don't know that that still exists in today's gay community, but I came up in the world of we're family and you should always have your brother and sister's backs to the end. I'm one of those people, like, if somebody's coming at somebody who's gay, I'm going to be right there. It's just my belief. I'm not as actively involved in the queer community as I could or should be. Absolutely not.
How do you use social media to promote your work?
I just relaunched my website and I do Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I feel like Twitter is probably the most powerful of the three. I think Facebook is phasing out. At least that's what I've experienced. When I went back into Facebook and was looking around, so much has changed. I don't think you're allowed to promote on Facebook anymore. I don't see as many writers promoting their work like I used to. I don't know what the rules are, but I feel like I heard that you're not necessarily allowed to promote as much.
What do you like to read?
I keep thinking about Murder, She Wrote because my sensitivity level right now is really sharp. I don't want to read anything disturbing right now. I don't have it in me. That's unfortunate because I have a lot of great horror books that I would like to read, but I don't want to read anything that is going to necessarily upset me at the moment because of everything that's going on in the world. I find that frightening. I'm trying to read comforting things or things that I find comforting. I had just read a series of books that I had been wanting to read based on the characters from Beatrix Potter. From Beatrix Potter's point of view, and the animals are solving mysteries in these English towns. It's mindless. And I say that in a very kind way because it was nothing that was going to disturb me. I'm just being real. But before that, I had delved into Gormenghast and I read Titus Alone. I didn't think I loved it as much as I did until I was done. I don't think I've been as enthralled. I have full body chills talking about it, or completely mesmerized by something in a long time. I can't stop thinking about it. I am not ready to read the second book yet. I read Titus Alone. It's so my world that there were moments when I felt like he was inside my head writing. Characters and things that were happening that were just so of my imagination that I hated him a little bit for stealing them from me. It was written so long ago, and I was like, wow, I was so blown away by it and also irritated by it. I was definitely ready for it to be over. Then I read the Beatrix Potter story. Now I just took a dive into reading Blonde by Joyce Carol Oates, which is the Marilyn Monroe fictional account of her life. And the reason I'm reading it is my husband had worked on the original miniseries. I don't know when it came out, but I bought the book 100 years ago. They're doing a new version on Netflix. When I saw the trailer for it, I said, you know what? I've got to read Blonde. Joyce Carol Oates, what a writer. Where has she been my whole life? I don't know if Blonde is the smartest place to start with her, but it's great so far.
Do you have any words of wisdom to pass along to other queer writers?
A couple. Nobody is as interested in your writing as you are. That's just real. I can't think of anything worse than listening to a writer talk about their own writing. It's horrendous because nobody's as interested. And I don't care how anybody pretends to, because everybody has their own shit. And I live in California and Los Angeles where everybody has a project. So the last thing they want to do is hear about yours. The best way to get results or the best way to get people to read your stuff and take it seriously is to pay them. It definitely will speed the process and speed the timeline. So if you do have a beta reader who's like, oh, I don't care, I'll read it for free. Yeah, in 6 months. How about if I just kick you some money? We'll speed this up a little bit. Those are my two words of wisdom. I've been working on my novel for years and I've paid a lot of money for edits because I think if you are paying someone, they're going to take it more seriously. I worked with an editor who I had worked with before, again, stepping back into the world very Anne of Green Gables and naive, as I always am. Did not realize that the person I was working for was a grandmother who lived in Missouri. That's absolutely who I would get as an editor. I would not get like the young, hip, cool, I'm going to get the 78-year-old grandmother editing this epic gay horror series. But that's just my luck.
I will say thank you, Xavier Exelson.
Yes, thank you so much, Wayne. Great to talk to you.